Good morning. Welcome to Mountain Money for another Monday. Beautiful day today. 81 degrees could be our high. Just awesome after a great weekend and great Balloon Fest.
Yeah, we could not have asked for nicer weather for the Balloon Fest. That was so much fun.
This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and the show is Mountain Money. And we are going to repeat a segment today because our original guest, Doug, is caught up in some kind of hold at the airport because of this ongoing terrorism investigation. So,
yeah, and our original guest was wrote a book about bringing peace to the world through entrepreneurialism. So it's sad and ironic that he's being held up because of the events in New York City.
Yeah, so we will get to him on a future show, but we can't bring that to you today. So instead, we have queued up one of Doug and my favorite segments of the year, in which we talk to the automotive editor, Mike Quincy, of Consumer Reports. And they have this, he has this dream job, he and his team on the automotive, where they buy pretty much one of every car, and then they have in Connecticut a test track, and they put them through the paces. And imagine this guy, every 2 or 3 weeks, he gets a brand new car to drive, and take the family out in it and put it through its paces on the track and in the city, and come up with reports on the best cars of the year. And the model year is ending, so this is kind of a preview of what the great cars are that are out in the marketplace right now. So we will bring you Mike's interview with Consumer Reports in just a few moments.
Yeah, and then we're going to go back live. We're going to have Dave Riley here in the studio. He is the owner of Open Air Art Space over by Jeremy Ranch. It's a shared workspace, not for entrepreneurs, not for business people, but for artists. Same concept applied to artists. So I'm interested in that conversation. Then our final guest is going to be John Mirko, who is a chef formerly with Talisker, and he is opening up a new restaurant called Firewood in one of Larry Warren's old favorite restaurant spaces, Cicero. I know you're sad to see Cicero's go, but hopefully this will be a wonderful replacement.
Well, no more Monday spaghetti night. It started out at $3.99 and I think wound up at $6.99, but it was a plate of spaghetti on Monday night, and that was a great locals.
You're singing
tradition.
My tune, Larry Warren, with frugal restaurant deals. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW this Monday morning. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Gordo here.
And I'm Larry with All Resort Group, a proud sponsor of KPCW.
Since 1974, we've been part of this community with shared ride, private van, and SUV service for our customers.
Reservations available at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and companies support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. And fall is when people see the new car model for the year. And it's a good time to catch up with Consumer Reports and Mike Quincy, the automotive specialist for the magazine, the editor of the cars section. And let's go to Mike Quincy talking about the latest and greatest cars they've tested out there in Connecticut.
Good morning. How's everybody today?
Oh, we're doing well. It's beautiful here.
We're just fine, and happy to have you on. We have you on a couple times a year to talk cars, one of our favorite subjects. And you know Park City by now from talking to us that we're a Subaru town.
Awesome. So is all of New England.
And that is one of your top picks. Why don't you talk to us about the best car brands you've tested in the last year?
Sure, the April issue of Consumer Reports has our traditional top picks list, And honestly, Subaru is all over it. Our top pick for a compact car is the Subaru Impreza, and our top pick also is one of these cars that is comfortable, it's quiet, it is fuel efficient, and it also joins the Subaru Forester as our top pick for a small SUV.
Hey, I got to tell you, I anticipated how brilliant you were. I bought a Forester about a month before your issue came out.
Well, look at that. If you could pick stocks that way, we could go into business.
Yeah.
but either the Forester or the Impreza are going to do your listeners well because they both come with standard all-wheel drive.
Well, that's one of the things here for Park City where, you know, our norm is you want to be able to have a nice car to get around in, but you want to be able to fill it with skis and you want to be able to throw a mountain bike on the back. And I was wondering, you know, other than the obvious Subaru, which I think represents about one out of every three cars on the road here, what other picks do you have that would fit Park City?
Well, if you can spend a little bit more money and you want a luxurious experience, Consumer Reports' top pick for a luxury SUV is the Lexus RX. And we tested both the regular V6 model as well as the hybrid version. And the hybrid got an impressive 29 miles per gallon overall, which is really quite impressive when you think about how much content is stuffed into this car. And you get the usual Lexus treatment of a comfortable interior, a beautiful fit and finish. It's very quiet. It's very, very, very nice to drive. So that would be another choice for a little bit lower on the pay scale. The Kia Sorento is Consumer Reports' top pick for a mid-sized SUV. This comes in around $35,000 to start, more or less. It has a lot of room inside. It has a small third-row seat, which you wouldn't expect for a vehicle like this, and a very smooth and responsive 290-horsepower V6 engine. So, when people think about Kia or Hyundai for that matter, and they think, oh, they're just kind of a junky car company. Believe me, they have come a long way, and I would put the Kia Sorento on your short list for a good mid-sized SUV.
You know, Audi is tops your list, Subaru next, and I'm trying to go down, I think it's number 16 of the best brands of cars. You have to go down 16 places before an American car company makes your list for overall quality of car.
Well, actually, Buick is number 7. So that's
okay.
That's the highest.
I blew right by Buick. Yes, indeed.
That's okay. Buick and Ford really are the shining light for Detroit. If you're rooting for the home team, Ford, as you mentioned before, came in 16 overall. And when Consumer Reports looks at which brands make the best cars, we're looking at the vehicle's overall score, the road test score, the predicted reliability of each tested model, and we kind of total up the numbers. And as you mentioned, Audi's topping the list. They're our number one brand with a whole lineup of vehicles that are comfortable and do well in Consumer Reports tested, and they're also followed by Subaru, Lexus, Porsche, BMW, Mercedes, and as we said, Buick is the seventh place.
So one of the things that we're seeing is more of these hybrids, and you had quite a bit of conversation about the Prius in the article, but the one that just kind of blows me away is the pre-orders for the new Tesla that they basically sold a couple of years' worth of cars in a couple of days. How do you see the whole electric car and hybrid thing fitting into both reliability and just better cars to own?
You know, mostly the data, the reliability data Consumer Reports has on hybrids is very favorable. I mean, we have over 10, 12 years of reliability data on the previous versions of the Toyota Prius, which is a complicated car. It's got the gas hybrid setup. It's got the rows of batteries in the floor pan, and it all comes together and works quite well. So when people are talking about, you know, I don't know if I trust this technology, a lot of the Toyota hybrids are turning out to be very reliable. Honda has had a slightly less successful track record with their hybrid technology. And in terms of Tesla's reliability, they're kind of running hot and cold. While the overall technology of the all-electric Tesla certainly dazzled us, it scored off the charts in our testing. The reliability of the Model S is below average, so we can't recommend it anymore. But I mean, you have to give Tesla credit for really pushing the envelope for electric vehicles. They've got the public's imagination. I mean, when the new model, when they were taking orders for the new model, It was like the Beatles were, you know, getting back together and selling concert tickets.
Indeed. And, you know, I think it was last year when we talked to you, you said you had rated Tesla 101 on a 100-point scale and called it the most perfect car ever. Since then, there have been some recalls and some missteps, but it's still one of the better electrics out there, right?
Yeah, and Consumer Reports has... We survey our hundreds of thousands of actually our millions of subscribers to get reliability data, and a lot of Consumer Reports subscribers own the Tesla Model S and reported below average reliability, which is too bad. But that is not you know, quelling any enthusiasm that the general public has for Teslas.
You know, at our Rotary Club that Steve and I both belong to, the Tesla people brought around a couple of Teslas a couple of years ago, and they were pretty sweet, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. It's nice to get that opportunity because we here in Utah, we get kind of caught up in the whole dealership thing, and so we don't have Teslas for sale here in Utah. You can simply demonstrate them.
We have this unusual situation where the car dealers among other interest groups, seem to run our legislature, and they don't allow factory direct selling in this state. So Tesla built a nice car dealership, and now they can't sell anything.
The auto dealer lobby is very strong across the United States. And what's funny, and this is certainly coming from a Consumer Reports perspective, is they seem to be protecting a system that everyone hates.
Exactly. Now talk about the bottom of your list. Which remain the cars to run away from?
Well, when you're talking about, you know, the cars that to run away from, and these are cars that do, you know, poor in either our testing or have poor reliability. Some of the brands in particular that are ranking low are Nissan and Infiniti these days for whatever reason. I mean, Nissan and Infiniti used to be able to make really, really nice models, but cars that have that in the April issue of Consumer Reports we have a chart that called cars that owners would not buy again, and the Nissan Sentra,
you don't want to land on that one.
The Nissan Sentra, the Nissan Altima, the Infiniti Q50, the Nissan Quest, the Infiniti QX60 are all on that list of models that Consumer Reports subscribers say they wouldn't buy again. So if you're rooting for Nissan, they need to get back to the drawing board and try to make better cars. The April issue of Consumer Reports also has tons of lists, best of worst lists, like the best, most fuel efficient, the best new cars under $25,000, the most reliable cars. I mean, it's just a chock full of automotive information, the April issue.
And I think your bottom dwellers last year were Jeep and Fiat, and they remain so today.
Jeep and Chrysler. Well, Chrysler is owned by Fiat, and they are certainly having a rough go of it. You know, we thought that maybe with Fiat's money pouring in to Chrysler that they'd really be lifted out of the doldrums. But Fiat as a brand has the worst cars that Consumer Reports has tested and awful reliability. Jeep also, which is too bad because I know, I'm sure in the mountain country, Jeeps are very popular and we like driving the Jeep Wrangler. We just wish that the Wrangler and the Grand Cherokee had better reliability.
Well, there are a couple of Jeeps within our KPCW family here. Those owners are not going to like hearing that.
I totally get the appeal. Certainly on nice days when you can put the top down in a Wrangler and go off into the mountains, I totally get it. It just, the company could make them a touch more reliable, though.
So one of the other things you've got in your article was a discussion about a lot of the safety technology that's coming out and how there's a lot of improvements that are sort of moving their way from, you know, just the high-end options to more of the base standards. But you guys were actually proposing taking it a step further and making them standard in all vehicles. You talk about that a little bit?
Oh, sure. I mean, when a lot of the buzz these days has been about autonomous driving, and the truth is that there's a lot of autonomous technology that's available right now for the cars that you buy. For example, forward collision warning is an autonomous system that senses when you're coming upon a vehicle in front of you at a higher rate of speed and it's either going to give you an audible signal or a flashing light in the dashboard that says you need to start braking now. And the better systems will automatically brake for you if you're not paying attention. That is a great safety feature. And yes, we do think that this should be a standard on all models. Another system that we like is blind spot warning. When there's a car in your blind spot and you really can't see it, the system is going to scan the sides of the roads to tell the driver there's a car there that you might not know. And again, you might get an audible warning, a light might flash, and some of the models will physically move the steering wheel for you to make sure that you're not merging into a lane where a car lurks in your blind spot.
It's interesting stuff, and yeah, my Subaru Forester was only about $26,000, and it has forward collision warning and automatic braking, which the first time was a little disconcerting to have, but then I saw something in front of me that I needed to be paying attention to. Also, lane keeping assist it has, and so these aren't really necessarily high-cost options.
Correct, and this is like you mentioned. Subaru is one manufacturer that makes these features available on vehicles that don't cost an arm and a leg. I mean, usually you have to get sort of the high end trim line to get it, and we would like to see these safety features to be made available even on the lowest trim line. I mean, for example, like if you're getting a Honda and you want all these safety features. Honda's not a good example because they have a ton of safety features standard on a bunch of their cars. But Subaru is a good example. You have to get like the limited trim line to get a lot of this stuff, and it should be available on the base model.
It's interesting when we talk about this how, you know, the technologists amongst us look at it and go, wow, this is, you know, really advantageous. But I was watching on the Tonight Show the other day, and some guy had his mom in a Tesla and put it in autonomous mode, and she basically had a breakdown driving down the road because the car was going along, but it was doing fine. It was slowing down, but I think there's a whole mentality that's got to change here in the United States before we can feel comfortable getting behind a car and not having control of the wheel.
I've read similar articles about that because people are when they're testing autonomous cars, they're experiencing some motion sickness. Because they're just sitting there, but they're used to physically controlling the car and to not be active. But your brain and your eyes are still scanning the road and doing all that stuff. It's throwing a lot of people off. I mean, it's definitely going to have to take some getting used to. But if we dial back the pages of history for a while, there was a long time when seatbelts, for example, were optional on cars, and it took a big public reminder system throughout all of the media to tell people wear your seatbelt. And the older drivers were saying, "Oh, well, you know, they make me feel uncomfortable, and I don't want to wear them," and blah blah blah. So I think you're going to find another kind of a learning curve and a generation to get used to a lot of this autonomous safety features.
Yeah, that's it. How far in the future our self-driving cars? I mean, right now we're fighting air wars in the Middle East with drones that are controlled from, you know, Las Vegas or St. Louis or somewhere, and they're very accurate. But there's not the skies are not crowded over there, and our roads are very crowded. So is this still something that's in the near future or just way out there before this happens?
It depends on who you talk to. Some automotive analysts suggest that a fully autonomous car is going to be available, you know, around, you know, 2025 or something like that. I'm not sure if that's as they say, that, you know, boots on the ground or something like that. I would say that there's so many legal hurdles to go through. I mean, you have the hardware and the software to do it right now. The problem is you don't have just dedicated lanes of self-driving cars. You don't have all of the lawyers and insurance companies lined up to see what's going to happen the first time an autonomous car hits somebody. I mean, whose fault is it? Is it the driver's fault? Is it the car's fault? Is it the software maker's fault? There's just so many legal barriers to get through that I think that's it's gonna take a while.
It also just seems like, you know, if there's a pothole ahead, you're gonna want to swerve, and it just seems like there are some things, you know, a dog runs across a road. How quickly are systems going to be able to spot little one-off events like that?
Right, or you have to make a judgment call. I mean, how does the numbers of scenarios that the car's computer are going to have to run through are just almost not. You can't count this many. I mean, as you mentioned, a dog is running on the side of the road. What happens? If someone, you know, is riding their bike, but there's also a barrier, and something will come up where a driver would normally make a decision about what to do, and I'm not sure that the legal system is ready to cross those lines yet.
But it's been pretty impressive to see how many miles the Google cars have logged. And I think I heard they finally just had – they've had a couple of collisions, but they finally had one that they actually thought was the Google car's fault. All the other cars, the accidents they'd had were somebody basically running into their autonomous cars. I think we're moving along pretty quick. And in fact, Hollywood just announced – and of course it's Hollywood, but they just announced that they're going to have autonomous cars as a free service in the city – sometime in the future, and they're starting to work on it now. So it's interesting to see some of the cities start driving it.
And it also is a probably godsend for a lot of people. If you're handicapped, if you're older, if you're vision impaired, you know, if you have an aging parent, and that parent needs to get around but really can't drive as well as they used to, an autonomous car can be wonderful. You're on a night on the town with a bunch of your friends, and you don't have to worry about driving in while you're intoxicated. The autonomous car takes care of it for you. I mean, the benefits are awesome, but we still have a little ways to go.
You know, let's get back to today's reality, which is cars available today. And for those who choose not to buy new or really prefer to buy broken-in used cars, what have you found to be the most reliable brands to look for or models to look for in the used market?
Well, generally, when we're looking at reliability for new cars, you can look at a brand and get an idea of the ones that are holding together the best. And the April issue of Consumer Reports has a best of the best used car list for just about every price range from $10,000 up to over $25,000. And, you know, lo and behold, looking at the list, you have models from Mazda, Acura, Honda, Toyota, Kia, believe it or not, Nissan has a couple on there. And these are cars that are well made from the get-go, and we have enough data to back it up. But I would say that for a lot of your listeners, maybe in the market for a good used SUV, I mean, you're talking about a vehicle with all-wheel drive, I would check out the 2013 Mazda CX-5 or the 2010 to 2011 Toyota RAV4. These are both relatively small SUVs, good reliability, good fuel economy, and probably will do quite well in the snow.
Yeah, I was sad a couple of decades ago to look and go through the car issue and see my car specifically listed in exact detail on ones to avoid.
Ouch.
So, yeah, it was an old Chevy Blazer, and you even specifically mentioned the exact engine size I had. So,
you know, we get a lot of angry letters and emails from people because we have not been kind to their particular car. And by the way, the used models that I just mentioned, the Mazda CX-5 and Toyota RAV4, those are priced probably between $15,000 and $20,000. So that's a reasonable price for a good used car. A used car that's maybe 2 or 3 years old has taken its steepest depreciation hit. It might even have some factory warranty left over. And with a model that is done well in Consumer Reports reliability ratings, then, you know, it's probably a safe bet to get a good car and save a lot of money.
Yeah, I have to ask one last quick question before we go. On behalf of our program director, Bob, who has a Mini Cooper that's just giving him fits, what have you found about the Mini Cooper? Your overall score is 64-72, which is certainly better than maybe most, but it's not up there very high.
It breaks my heart because every Mini Cooper I've driven, I've absolutely loved. But in the April issue of Consumer Reports, the Mini Cooper and the Mini Countryman have both landed on our list of the worst of the worst for used cars.
Sorry, Bob.
You know, I hate to, but trust me, I hate to say that because I love these cars. They're so much fun to drive. They're good looking. They're manufactured with BMW engineers in mind. But the reliability has just been dreadful, and like I said, I hate to say it, but Mini Cooper has not unlocked the reliability key yet.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us so much. Mike Quincy, the automotive specialist for Consumer Reports, the April issue should still be on the stands. It is titled The Best and Worst New Cars, and the top 10 picks of the year is in there. It's all interesting reading. If you're obsessed with cars like many in Park City are. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And again, that was a repeated interview with Consumer Reports car editor Mike. A great guy, calls in a couple times a year to talk about cars. And Steve Joyce joined me for that episode of Mountain Money. And the reason is that, you know, it's funny how things ripple through the country. Our first original guest is hung up at the airport where there's a security alert in New York City, so was unable to join us. So we will schedule him for another day. His name is Stephen Coltai, author of a new book, Peace Through Entrepreneurship, which is about getting people working in these areas of war so they have income coming in and maybe feel less dispossessed. A couple of program notes. There is a community forum tonight to address the deaths last week of two Treasure Mountain Junior High School students, and that will be held tonight at the Jim Santee Auditorium. It begins at 6 p.m. It's sponsored by Valley Behavioral Health and the Summit County Health Department, and we will broadcast it live. If you can't be there and have your questions answered in person, we won't. There isn't a call-in segment, but we will air the entire forum. It begins at 6 tonight. You can also stream it if you're not near a radio at kpcw.org, or go to your phone and pick up our app and listen to it through your phone. So the high today is expected to be 81 under skies just like you see them, 81 degrees under sunny skies. Then it's going to start clouding over and transitioning. Still going to be warm through Wednesday, still in the 70s through Wednesday. But then a cold period will come through and temperatures will drop, and we could have thunderstorms by Wednesday night and a chance of showers Thursday and Friday as well. But nonetheless, fall color is sort of peaking at the aspens are here and some of the reds are still on the mountains as we look out of the corner studios. Well, we're going to talk about the beauty of this place and others and art. When we come back, we'll be talking with David Riley, the owner of Open Air Art Space, a shared studio space for artists. And we'll be back to talk with David after this.
This is Craig McCarthy with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Being a member of the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business and provides a wide array of benefits. We promote your business, provide networking and educational opportunities, and even have benefit programs for you and your employees. For more information, visit us online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
This is Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and KPCW supporter. Epic Promise grants focus on youth programs and environmental initiatives that impact our communities. Grants fund programs that help kids achieve great things in the classroom and develop a passion for the outdoors by engaging guests, local communities, and employees. Information at epicpromise.com.
Welcome back to Mound Money on this beautiful Monday morning. As Larry said, the hills are starting to peak in their beauty. And speaking of beauty, we have an artist in studio with us today. We've got David Riley. He is the owner of Open Air Art Space, which is shared artist space over at Jeremy Ranch. David, welcome. Thank you for joining us on Mound Money.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So let's start with the concept. What is shared studio space for artists?
Yeah. Well, what we have 12 different artists that all rent space, and I think the point of it is to feed off each other's energy, to give critique, and to make each other better just through proximity.
And this is really a outgrowth of a venture that you've been doing. You've been working in meeting with other artists at a home in Glen Wild. Tell us about that and how that grew into what you're doing now.
Yeah, for about 8 or 9 months, we would meet at a residence, and I would go and teach. And eventually, we just got too many people for the space, and I think the spouse of the of the residence probably had gotten tired of having us crash their house and paint there. So we needed new space and lucked out and found an awesome space over at Jeremy Ranch and filled our other spots and are just kind of continuing to grow now.
So describe that space. Do you provide materials or just an empty space and they bring in their own, or do you have like ceramics studios and that sort of thing?
Gotcha. Yeah, we really have got two different things going on. We've got the shared studio space where 12 artists have their own room and their own space to work and create. And then on top of that, we have a teaching space, which is an open space where I'm hosting classes, have other artists come in and teach and host workshops. And so really there's two different ventures there.
But mostly painters?
Yeah, currently all 2D, so drawing and painting right now.
And I presume you are one
yes.
of them.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm currently showing with Meyer Gallery on Main Street. And and then right now I'm doing primarily all the teaching there as well.
And what do you, with amateur painters, you're a professional, but what are some of the main challenges that you see, kind of the common themes that hold people back from getting to the next level?
Nice. Yeah, that's a great question. Primarily, it comes down to, in my opinion, primarily it comes down to needing to increase foundational skills so that artists have the ability to express and paint exactly what they want. And I think that spans the gap between realism and more abstract artwork, is that if you're not fluent in drawing shape and proportion, value, color theory, then you end up falling short sending the message that you're hoping to send.
So let's stay on this concept of foundational skills for a little bit. I was joking with you in the green room that, you know, Larry and I are artistically challenged. But the truth is,
I know
many
good art
people,
when I see it. I just can't
do it. You're ahead of me. I know good art when somebody that knows good art tells me this is good art. But, you know, that said, I have taken some art classes, and mm-hmm. I'm always astounded at what I can draw when somebody says, okay, here's how to do it. Here's the building blocks. Can most people learn to draw? Can most people learn to paint at a level that is something that is societally acceptable?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's one of the big messages I would like to try to get out to people, is that you don't have to be born with it. If you're trying to attain a certain level, like an Olympic level in the art world, then yeah, you should probably have a little talent and a lot of hard work. But for most normal people, the foundational skills in art are extremely learnable. We try to present them in a very understandable, digestible way. And And anyone who would like to be able to paint a picture, they can give to a friend and feel proud about it, something like that. That's all extremely, extremely learnable.
So when my teenage girls were younger, we used to like to draw at home. Mm-hmm. And this is when YouTube just came out. And we would YouTube how to draw. And then, you know, at the time they were into Disney characters or whatever, but how to draw and then whatever the character is.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I mean, you really can. And you're freehanding it. It's not like you're tracing something.
Right.
So what are some good tools for folks? I just mentioned YouTube. That's probably not the best source. But if somebody's interested in just getting started and playing with it and having fun, what are some good resources they should know about?
Yeah. Open Air Art Space, for one, definitely come and check out our classes.
Are you going to have open enrollment classes where if you're not an artist, you can?
Absolutely. Okay. Anywhere from – the way it's set up is more – we're set up more like an atelier. And so what that means is that I work with students one-on-one and artists one-on-one, and we progress them through the levels of art. So it doesn't matter if you've never drawn or if you've been painting for 20 years and just want to get a little bit better. I think bringing it all back to understanding some foundations is good. So number one would be always get with somebody who really knows how to create art, or that knows how to create the artwork that you are interested in. It is specific. So if you want to draw Disney cartoons, go to someone who's really good at drawing. If you want to learn abstract, go to someone who's an amazing abstract painter. Take workshops, but it comes down to regular practice, I think.
Yeah, so in addition to the teaching you do, you're having workshops through the fall. A pretty distinguished regional artist. I see the first one is David Dibble, and I love his work. So what all do you have coming up?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about David and then the others you have coming.
Yeah, this year so far we've got David Dibble teaches down at BYU. He's just an amazing artist, but phenomenal landscape
artist. These are kind of landscapes you see around rural Utah.
Yes, yeah, and I think he does primarily paint in the area. Just phenomenal understanding of color and value edges. Great paintings.
Yeah, plein air guy.
Yes.
Paints on site.
Yeah, so this workshop is plein air, two-day workshop. It's going to be packed full of information, so that'll be an excellent one for people who want to get outside and paint the landscape. And then we've got Casey Childs coming up after that, who the last 2 years has won awards with the Portrait Society of America. He just phenomenal portraits, is just a great painter as well. And then we've got Doug Smith from Salt Lake City, who's going to come over and do a 2-day encaustic workshop. And encaustic is a really fun combination of natural with in his style is organic combined with geometric, which is creates a lot of fun artwork that way.
Do you things come in favor, they go out of favor. My sense is the whole interest in casual amateur artwork is on an uprising. Are you seeing that?
I think so. I think people are realizing to kind of feel whole as humans that we need a creative outlet. What we do is primarily two-dimensional. I don't think it matters if it's 2D or 3D, but having that outlet, having a creative outlet and finding that you've got more skill and talent than maybe you thought, because throughout our lives we kind of get beat into our heads that only certain people can be artists. And I think we are all artists.
Which is really sad, right? I mean, that voice gets in your head in second or third grade when a teacher comes and, you know, praises the kid in the desk next to you and doesn't say anything when he or she passes your desk.
Have we touched the nerve?
Maybe math will be your thing. Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, the whole creative side, Larry. You know, I'm learning to code, and I do know how to code. And one of the things I really like about it, you think of it being more of a math, more of a problem-solving thing, but there's a very creative side to it. It's very therapeutic and relaxing, much like when I used to draw with my girls when they were younger. So I do see an uprising in it, which I think is going to benefit your business. Now, your business is here in Park City.
Yeah.
But you actually commute from Springville, which is quite a distance.
It is.
What is it about the Park City community that makes this the right place for your business?
Yeah. my wife has family in the area, and so that kind of got us started here. But from coming up here, I've really noticed I love the community here. I love how people tend to seem to be up for new challenges, looking for ways to round themselves out, I think is really what it is. And so the people I've met here are up for a little personal growth, and art is a great way to get that.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about how folks can get in touch with you, find out about the workshops, and exactly where you're located.
Yeah, but our website is www.openairartspace.com, and people are more than welcome. Just call me directly. My phone number is 660-238-3116, and I can keep people up to date if you do that, or shoot me an email. We have weekly classes, Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, where I'm teaching people primarily in a one-on-one type of fashion. And all our workshops and upcoming events will be on our website as well.
All right. Well, very fine. Our guest has been David Riley. He is opening up a new space. The open house is going to be on September 30th from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. The shared art space is called Open Air Art Space. David, thanks for coming in, and good luck with your new business.
Thank you very much for having me.
And stay tuned to Mound Money. Up next is going to be John Murko. He is the chef and owner of a new restaurant on Main Street called Firewood. You're listening to Mound Money on KPCW. Please stay tuned.
Support for KPCW comes from Crandall Capital with New Park Town Center. With urban amenities and services and home to restaurants, shops, entertainment, lodging, and residences. More information about New Park Town Center at 801-303-5440.
Hello, I'm Justin Keyes. As an attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo, I'm pleased to support Mountain Money on KPCW. Our firm provides construction, real estate, and general business legal services to the Park City community. We are online at joneswaldo.com and can be reached at 435-200-0085.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Our thanks again to David Riley, the owner of a new shared art space over by Jeremy Ranch. In studio with us now is John Murko. He's the chef and owner of a new restaurant on Main Street called Firewood. John, welcome to Mound Money.
Thank you. Good morning.
So there's not any empty restaurant space on Main Street. Where is Firewood going?
So that was formerly the Cicero space that I've entered into a long-term lease there with.
Okay, and have you been looking on Main Street for a space for a while, or how did you decide on Cicero space?
Yeah, but pretty much since spring, we've been looking for something. I really wanted to come back to Main Street, so I've been gone for about 4 years and was excited to return to Park City and find a space on Main.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You were affiliated formerly with Talisker. Talisker kind of went by the wayside a few years ago, and you started the farm, among other restaurants, Red Tail Grill as well, a lot of the dining, Cloud Dine as well, a lot of the dining at the Canyons. And it did quite well. The farm especially got great reviews. And then you went away. Where did John Murko go all these years?
Yes, that was quite a tour there. And then I left, went up to Sun Valley for 4 years. And worked on recreating not only all their restaurants, but opened up a few restaurants while I was up there.
Very fine. And what's the concept of Firewood? What are you bringing to Main Street? Something new?
Yeah, hence the name. What I'm going to be doing there is going to be cooking with wood on everything. So there is no gas appliances on the line. Everything will be wood-fired, everything from a wood oven to cooking in coals to rotisseries. And different types of wood I will use for different types of meats and vegetables.
Well, you're going to need the guy who's right outside the studio. He comes every day, every Monday at 9 o'clock with truckloads of firewood for bandits. So do different woods produce different temperatures and work for different kinds of food?
Absolutely. So everything from apple to pecan. So they all emits of different types of flavors and smoke. So above this piece of equipment that I have, it has hot smokers and cold smoke, rotisseries, but it has over five different areas where you can use different types of wood. So
So we've got a little cheat sheet here that gives us a little bit of background information. And the second paragraph highlights the cooking apparatus that you're going to be using. It's from Grillworks. Tell us about why you guys are highlighting Grillworks and why that's important to what you're doing at your restaurant.
Well, it's an interesting piece of equipment, and they're custom-made, so you can kind of design how you want it to lay out and how you want it to look. And what's great about it is it's adjustable heat. So as the fire gets hotter or colder, you can raise or lower the grills, and everything from a cast iron top to grills to cooking in the coals. So it's everything's adjustable. It also, in the back of it, it makes its own coal. So instead of actually cooking over the flame, the fire is fed from the back of the grill where it creates coal, and then you can scrape it into underneath.
And is this something that people that are going to be dining at the restaurant, they'll be able to see the operations of this?
Absolutely. So it's actually, you're pretty close to the kitchen. Dining room tables will be seated against warehouse windows where you'll be able to see into the space of what's happening back there.
And there is one restaurant, Brass Tag, in town now that's doing wood-fired cooking. Is this something that's trending now in the higher-end restaurant dining space?
It is, absolutely. Not only that, you know, it's so the oldest form of cooking, obviously, right, with fire. So to return back to that, it takes more skill, and it takes it definitely cooking with the seasons and with your heart because of your cooking over fire.
So how do you source wood? This is a softwood state. How do you get the hardwood in?
People out of Salt Lake, actually, you know, as you know, is south down by Provo. There's apple orchards and fruit orchards that do trimmings and cuts fruit wood. So you can get a lot of great fruit wood. Others are trucked into the area. But there's producers out of Salt Lake that have a wide variety.
And was this the concept you were hoping to do all along? Were you looking for a space where you could do something like this, or were you open to three or four different concepts and it just happened to work out for this one?
Well, I've opened up over 25 restaurants in my career, and you know, I was just thinking about what do I want to do for myself. And what came to me was actually do a lot of this outdoor cooking over wood down at my cabin in Escalante, and that came to me that I wanted to see if I can bring that into a production standpoint where you bring it into a restaurant setting. And with that in mind, I really wanted the space that would allow enough configuration that I could have wood cooking in the kitchen.
So Cicero's now, most folks in town probably have been there for spaghetti night or some other night. How are you radically changing the interior?
You won't recognize it. Besides the walls that are pretty much staying put, everything else is going to be a completely different feel, from reclaimed brick walls on the exterior of the walls to reclaimed wood, rust-on wood, and wood floors all throughout. A lot of iron and steel. There will be more of an industrial vibe.
It sounds really appealing and interesting. It also sounds expensive. do you have a group of investors that are backing you, or are you doing this 100% on your own?
This is with my family, so it's a family investment for us to open this up.
Well, talk about Main Street. I mean, the price that Cicero's sold for was gigantic. It was several million dollars. You're the lessor, or the lessee. I never get that right. Lessee. You know, is it going to be the case going forward with the way Main Street prices, commercial spaces are going, that only high-end, high-dollar restaurants are going to be able to make it on Main Street?
That's what I, you know, it's interesting. You're getting such a different mix that I've seen since the early 90s on Main Street with more high-end retail, and you're starting to see the restaurant scene evolve and change to really becoming more of dinner and less, less restaurants serving breakfast and lunch. So I would say, you know, with what's happening with the real estate market, yeah, I think you're seeing a change in that shift in styles of restaurants that are coming to me.
So what would a typical entree be at firewood and what kind of price points are you going to be at?
Well, we don't want to be at the very top of the market in Park City, but we, by all means, what we are going to see somewhere in the mid-30s will be a typical price range for an entree.
And a typical entree. Just give us four or five things you know you're gonna put on that menu.
Well, I met the owners and operators of the Snake River Farms up in Idaho and got to fall in love with that. They were one of the first to bring actually the Wagyu beef variety to the States, which is just incredible. And with that relationship, they've actually picked some incredible meat out for me, and they have been working with them for the last 4 years. So definitely we'll see some Snake River Farms on the menu. There's another 44 Farms out of Texas that does all natural and heirloom beef that is great quality. So, I'm a real fan of high quality ingredients that are that speak for themselves, that you don't have to mask or change.
And local foods is the big thing now. So what are you sourcing closer than Texas and Idaho?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a big fan of buying whatever you can from your community.
That was kind of the whole concept behind the farm. Yeah. So you kind of pioneered it here.
Yeah, and that was a great relationship with, Summit County Beef and developing buying whole animals and how to work with local purveyors. And that was, what you find is these relationships that bring incredible cheeses and honeys from the area. And you follow the seasons, and that's what's more important than anything, is to really follow what's being produced in your area and not try to cook with tomatoes in December.
We know what they taste like.
Styrofoam.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us. John Murko is opening when?
Well, first part of December, we hoping so.
Going to catch the full ski season.
Yep, thank you.
Very fine. So firewood, John Murko, going into the Cicero's space in December. Look for it. And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Park City Bike Demos, Kearns Boulevard next to Adolph's, parkcitybikedemos.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Sorry we had to slip in a rerun there, but it was unavoidable. And I do want to remind everybody again that there is a community forum tonight regarding the deaths of students at Treasure Mountain Junior High. Has the whole town upset and on edge and just very saddened by the events of last week. So there's going to be a community forum to air out some of the concerns tonight at the Jim Sandy Auditorium. It starts at 6. If you can't be there, please join us on the air. We will broadcast that forum live. Starts at 6, expected to go till about 7:30, sponsored by Valley Behavioral Health and the Summit County Health Department. So that's coming up.
And Larry, as a, I'm here one day a week part-time, but as a member of the community, I just want to thank you and your entire team here for the coverage, for keeping us informed of what was going on, for airing this this forum tonight. I think a lot of people have busy schedules. They'd like to go. They won't be able to go. And it's an important service to the community. So thank you for doing that.
Well, it's community radio, and that's what we do.
Yeah. I also want to thank our great sponsors for this show, Mountain West Bank, Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Designs, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, All Resorts Group, Park City, and also Park City Apex Residence and Viridian Park City Columbia Pacific Properties.
And we are looking for a high of 81, probably the last day of the year in the 80s. Beautiful day today, increasing clouds by tomorrow, and then thunderstorms perhaps starting later on Wednesday. And showers by Thursday and Friday. So
well, we kind of, as much as we enjoy this beautiful weather, we do need the showers.
My
it's
lawn
been a very very dry summer.
My lawn was gasping for water when it came the other day. So that's terrific. And I want to thank our guests this morning. We had Mike Quincy from Consumer Reports Magazine, David Riley from Open Air Art Space, and John Murko, who is opening Firewood. He's remodeling the Cicero space as we speak, and a new restaurant will be opening toward the top of Main Street, kind of between the Egyptian and the Brew.